and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bokelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 606.
That's right. What are we talking about tonight?
Green Lantern Corps number 4. Among other things, but mostly Green Lantern Corps number 4.
Space cabin time.
Yeah. It's such a, like, it's not like it's a particularly intrusive or offensive character, but I don't have any love for the character either. It's like, so the fact that he shows up so sporadically, that I guess I'm okay with it. It's just making such a big deal over it kind of seems odd to me when the way they do it. The return of Space Cabby. Who cares? And I don't like, and the cover is really weird too, the main cover. I don't like the way Freddie and Slip. I don't like the way Kelly's drawn at all. Guy's, yeah, guy's
the only, always hit or miss.
Yeah. Guy's the only one on this cover that I really like the way he's drawn, and you can't even get a good look at him. You don't see Simon's face, so I guess that's a plus. No Norflow. Come on, man. All right, so let's just roll through this. This shouldn't take all that much time to go through. The issue title is Getaway. Morgan Hampton and Jeremy Adams writers. V. Ken Marion and Serge Acuna are the artists. Arif Prianto. I guess I try to blow this up. Font is so small. Rain Burrito, Hi-Fi, Lou Luffridge are the colorists, Dave Sharp letterer, cover artist Fernando Pissarin, Eau Claire Albert, and Arif Prianto, variant cover artist Lucas Meyer, Montos, V. Ken Marion, and Andrew Dollhouse, assistant editor Jillian Grant, editor Kathleen Wisniewski, he got it right this time, group editor Paul Kaminsky. So picking up where we left off, where we thought we were seemingly going to get a, maybe lifting the veils of some maybe a kind of different version of Kelly's origin, but now forget all that. This is just part of that, you know, the mind maze thing that they're all involved in, that Kelly and then Simon also get taken to moments in their past. And of course, the events that they are revisiting it's not really the memories. It's kind of like a warped version of the memory, which at least for the most part, we find, you know, which is literally because of the mind maze that Italian lizard Enzo put them in as he tries to get the gauntlet off. A lot of these things basically are subconscious dreamlike things while he's trying to pry this gauntlet off, though of course we get to the end and we know there's a little bit more going on, at least in Kelly's head still. So the first journey is this false origin of Kelly that kind of ends pretty quickly. Then we ended up with a false memory of Simon with Nazir, who we know Nazir really didn't die, but Nazir and supposedly did die in this false image. We cut back to Guy and Narf, who are being attacked by Evil Star. Perhaps the funniest thing in this whole book, well, one of the funniest things is Evil Star with his Scarface moment. Say hello to my giant friend. I don't quite understand the Evil Star font, just because they already call him Evil Star before we get to that point, and we've already seen him last issue. So having a big moment of him saying his own name in his own font kind of seems pointless to me. But they're trying to, but he and his henchmen are trying to hunt down Guy and Narf. Ellie helps get Simon and Kelly out of the Simon image, or the Simon pseudo dream sequence. And this just leads, all these things are through doors too. It's like one door, another door. Not very original, but conceptually easy to understand. Like you're going through doors in your mind. And Ellie thinks she's figuring it out, so she might be able to fly them through doors a little faster. And then we end up at a particularly painful memory for Kelly, who is dealing with the moment when her grandmother died, and I guess she had the choice of being with her grandmother or going off and doing her pseudo Green Lantern thing. And so that's kind of haunting her. Now, a guy was getting and trying to protect Narf, and they're under attack by Evil Star. He has a little pager essentially to call Space Cabby that he conveniently still has on him. So he hits the button. Space Cabby comes to rescue them right as he and Narf are trying to blend in, like in a bar or whatever, or just in the whole general atmosphere on Necrocopia. And of course, just at that moment is when basically the announcement comes through the whole place that, hey, if you see these Green Lanterns, there's a reward for them. So everybody turns their attention to them. Space Cabby crashes through and rescues them. And I guess it's mildly amusing that he won't go anywhere until they put their seatbelts on. I guess that's somewhat amusing. Evil Star, of course, continues to pursue them. He has a convenient little jetpack, which I kind of like, and they go into the bowels of the city because, of course, this is just like nowhere where it used to be a living being. Kelly essentially is being tempted while she's at the bedside of her grandmother. Basically, there's two doors. And if you go to, you know, one door, pretty much this, you can untap your potential. You can do unbelievable things. You'll be able to talk to me again in real life. And the other door, well, the other door is just not the same. Simon will not allow Kelly, even if she wanted to go through the other door, to go through the other door. They escape back into the real world. She leaves her grandmother, and she apologizes that she's not going to do what her grandmother wants and leaves her behind. They make their way back into the real world. At this moment, before we get to the resolution of that little subplot, my favorite panel in the entire book is when Narf and Guy are like holding each other, like out of instinct and panic as he's driving through the bowels. They're just holding on to each other, screaming. And we get the big reveal. That's really shocking. I call this one for what it's worth, of what Narf's special ability is and why he's special. That, yes, Narf indeed can embiggen himself. So it goes from being like a lion cub into this full-blown lion, which, of course, freaks the hell out of Evil Star, and he knows he's in trouble, and he gets taken out. And then probably this might be the other moment that's the best in the book, which when Guy's for a moment going, hey, Narf is awesome. He goes, actually, I'm his teacher, so I'm awesome. so Guy. Like, now but Kelly and Simon back into the real world. We see Enzo pretty much almost like a jackhammering, trying to get the stupid gauntlet off Kelly's wrist. Simon takes Enzo out. Guy hears the call about how two Green Lanterns were apprehended, and he obviously knows it wasn't him and Narf. So he instructs Space Cabby to they're going on like a reconnaissance mission. Though I do like Evil Star being strapped to the roof of the cab. I think that's a nice touch. They rescue Kelly. They rescue Simon. Simon says something, and of course, because it has to be wrapped up in a neat little bow, somehow, Simon pretty much took the psionic battery, I'm assuming, from Enzo at the end, no matter what, I guess, and gives it to Kelly. It's like, happy birthday, kid. And they mention Ellie as like, because of course they came in Simon's construct car, and Simon goes, hey, let's hope Ellie didn't leave my ride. And it's like, and they go, of course she's still there. Where else would she be? And now we go into Kelly's mind behind that door, the other door that they chose not to go through. And Ellie is like, you won't get in here, Ellie. Someone is talking to her behind that closed door. And next issue, what's behind that door? And a mission to MOGO.
Look, I want to be careful because I don't, on the surface, for taking this issue, and I think maybe even the previous issue, although this one is more so, at face value, they're fine. I don't have a problem with, you know, I think maybe the art looks weird here or there.
I agree.
Whatever. But this issue in particular, and maybe including last issue as well, since it started off this whole story arc, is a fucking Looney Tunes episode. It's, I mean, obviously the stuff with Kelly and Ellie and Simon is interesting and a bit tonally different, but it also has cartoonish qualities to it, you know, like Kelly using a giant hammer and, you know, the wrench and the thwang sound and, you know, the cartoonishly evil appearance of some of these people when they look possessed or whatever in the dream state. Like, you mentioned it, and yeah, it's totally fine. It's a good panel. Guy and Narf hugging each other. That's what like Daffy and Bugs would do to each other if they were about to, they saw they were about to drop off of a really big cliff. Like, you know, like this whole thing is a Looney Tunes cartoon. And there's nothing wrong with that, except it matches none of the tone of the first few issues of the series. So I don't know what we're really going for. Like, it's not that you can't have serious adventures and then zany adventures, because an adventure is an adventure, and when you're working within a space as wide as, you know, the universe for Green Lanterns, you know, some things are going to be horror, some things are going to be romance, some things are going to be comedy. Like, you know, who cares? It's going to happen. But it's just it feels so jarring from what we got before that I don't know where we're going next. Are we returning to the story of what's going on with the Red Lanterns? Or technically because they're on ice, you know, I guess we're not going to see them for a little bit. But what about Hot Girls thing? Or is that going on somewhere else? What's going on with John and Kilowog and Sorrow and Razor adjusting to the ring and everything like that? Like, I don't know where we're going next. And because I don't know where we're going next in terms of just tonally, like I it feels weird to be five issues into the series and not have a sense of tone. I don't know. There's nothing wrong with this. Again, I don't know what I'm fighting against, but it feels so jarring between the two different stories we're telling here. And I don't know what the writer is going for here tonally.
I think that's a fair criticism. I also think last issue had its flaws, but I think last issue as a setup was fine for the most part. There were still some issues with it, the whole coincidence of both sets of Green Lanterns going off to the same place and on separate missions. And of course, none of which on the surface, by the way, are really pushing forward the whole Fractured Spectrum storyline at all. But this issue, I think, is a little more disappointing. It is kind of hard to put your finger on necessarily why it is. I think it's part of it, of course, is the fact that I don't care about the Kelly, Simon, Ellie, Rose stuff. I don't really care about their storyline at all. I know why conceptually you have to at least do this once, even though it looks like we're going to pick up on this next, because at least the stuff in Kelly's mind, which means we're going to be dealing with Ellie too. So it sounds like we'll probably be seeing all three of them again, unless Simon's off doing his own thing. You almost have to touch upon these characters, at least in some arcs, because of the fact that you have them out there. Now, doing it so soon, that's debatable, unless somehow the stuff related to the gauntlet and what's behind that door is going to be a factor somehow in, which it probably won't be, but it could be in somehow in involved in the Fractured Spectrum storyline. I don't know. I mean, again, Guy's kind of like the highlight of this, and they gave Narf just enough to do to make him somewhat likable or cool. I liked him in the first issue. I know Jim didn't like him in the first issue, but it's okay. I mean, again, it's not great. I don't see this as a big issue or an issue that's going to help draw a lot of people to the book. The question, will this arc drive people away from the book? I don't know if that's the case either. But if I had to bet on one, I think it's more likely to turn people off than to bring more people on, unless even factoring in that if you have the small percentage of people that there are, the Kelly and the Simon fans, I think you're more likely to alienate more people who don't like them than whoever you are appealing to that might like them and give you a pass on this. It's okay. I mean, they are spreading the wealth around Green Lantern-wise in this core series so far, and I think that probably is a good thing. It has not been obviously an entirely John-centric book, which was probably my fear, considering how we know how those have not done particularly well over the last few years, the John-centric books. So it is what it is. I mean, it's not horrible. It's entertaining. Like I said, it is kind of slapstick. There's a lot of slapstick stuff in it, especially dealing with most of the guy stuff, arguably, is very slapsticky. Even the whole thing of Evil Star being strapped on the roof of the cab at the end and things like that. But
yeah, it's just because I'm thinking about it and I'm just like, okay, you know, what have we historically said we want from a core book and or a Green Lantern anthology type series. We've talked about before, like playing around with genre, jumping, you know, regardless of whether or not you like it or not, jumping into a Looney Tunes or slapstick, as you said, type of story arc and leaning into comedy here when you have the chance, that's playing around with genre. You're focusing on multiple different lanterns, including a lantern we're just now getting to know, which is Narf. This is his second issue. We're looping in other parts of the DC universe in terms of like Evil Star and Space Cabby. So like there's that. It's just, I'm just so confused about what this book is because of this, that I want to make it very clear to the audience, and I don't know, even God, if the creative team is listening, I don't know who knows who listens to this stuff anymore, but like, I'm not mad at it, but I am mad that I'm confused five issues in. And I don't know if that's realistic of me or not, because it almost feels like one of those arguments, especially based on everything that I just said that, you know, we would look for in a core book or an anthology book. It almost feels like, well, we are doing those things, so is there no winning with you kind of thing? Like, I'm even asking that of myself. And I don't know if that's too harsh of my own worst critic in that or not. If I don't, maybe I don't know what I want. I have no idea. I all I know is I'm frustrated at being this confused about this book five issues in.
I may not be as confused because, again, we've only had, what, two arcs, right? The first issue, the first issue was kind of part or a prologue to the arc with the next two issues. But still, I would probably consider it still part of the Jon Stewart Thanagar arc, and then we had this arc. It'll be more to me. We have to see how it's going to play out in the next few issues are going to be important, and I think it's important in general because we have to see what this book is going to be, how it's going to settle into its status quo, how it's going to play to the audience, what kind of audience is it going to have. So I think that a lot of those things are still up in the air when it comes to this. And
yeah, I just think, too, because of that, I don't have much more else to say about this book because at least this time, because anything else I could say could just be explained away by the tone they're going for here in terms of, you know, the slapstick, the Looney Tunes, because artistically I could say, it's so weird that if we look at like Guy Gardner, Simon, or Space Cabby or whatever, normal human proportions and eyes. But if we look at Kelly or Ellie, they have like cartoonishly anime size eyes in some parts. But again, we're also dealing with pretty much a cartoon character, Green Lantern, in the form of Narf. I wouldn't be surprised if he's from the same space sector as Chip. Just because Chip was always a cartoonish looking squirrel or whatever we wanted to call him. And, you know, a cartoonish looking lion kind of makes sense if it were from the same space sector. And anything I would say in terms of like dialogue or whatever, it's meant to be extreme. It's meant to be, like you said, slapstick. It's meant to be a little off here or there. So there's really nothing I can, you know, point to a specific panel and say here or there. I'm not the biggest fan of the art, but it didn't do anything wrong as far as I can tell outside of leaning into its own narrative style. So I think, unfortunately, this one, it's just I'm confused. See you next issue.
No, I get it, and I didn't really I didn't think the anime style for both Kelly and Ellie to a certain extent, but definitely Kelly, that kind of was a bit jarring too. Not as jarring as the way she was drawn on the cover, though. I think in a way that's arguably is worse, because at least Kelly is always kind of drawn like ridiculously young because she is young. What is she? 12?
She said her age last issue.
That's what I'm trying to remember. Did she just turn 13?
She mentions it. I'll pull it up.
She's either 12 or 13, I think.
Yeah.
Because Simon makes the joke about her being a Teen Lantern or being called Teen Lantern. So maybe
you're just now turning 12, but your name is Teen Lantern.
Yeah.
So she's 12.
She's 12. So I mean,
newly 12.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, we certainly have read less interesting issues in different books over the last year or 6 months. So, but there's not a lot there, and that's kind of an ongoing thread as far as from a review perspective that it's makes it easier.
I was more intrigued by the Crypto backup.
Yeah, I didn't even look at it.
There's a Last Dog of Krypton series coming up soon, if not already out, the first issue, and there's a first couple of pages of that being showcased at the end here. Anyways, yeah, that's about it. You got anything else for this?
No, for this, no, I'm good.
All right. What's next?
Well, ever so briefly, I would say, and what has Mark seen, which only was one thing, I saw The Ritual, which is Dan Stevens and Al Pacino in a much more grounded exorcism movie about, I guess, the most thoroughly documented exorcism case that there's ever been, which is supposedly, I guess, loosely the basis for the actual exorcist that we know. It's interesting from the perspective that they obviously try to, since I mentioned grounded, they try to make this the most very realistic in the approach to the procedure. And of course, the people's reaction to to the ritual itself, as opposed to maybe being a little over dramatic and cinematic. But it also kind of makes the movie drag a little bit, considering it's not particularly long. So I think this was a movie that was in relatively limited release. I don't think it really, based on the amount of money it made and the amount of screens it was on, I'm pretty sure if it was a wide release, it just barely met the definition, because I think you have to be in 1,000 theaters. I think you have to be in 1,000 theaters to technically count as a wide release. So if it was wide, it was probably that it's still probably not, wasn't very wide. I would say, you know, when it shows up on streaming, especially for free, I think it's probably worth a look, and the performances are pretty good. But I don't think anybody needs to run out, certainly, to go see that. And it, like I said, it's not particularly action packed, or the pace is relatively slow. So I think that could get in the way for some people and their enjoyment of it. But that's the only thing I have on that front.
Okay. Should we move on to some toy talk?
Yeah, we can do that.
All right. Just to get into a bit of toy talk. I got paid this past Friday, and, you know, after paying bills, which is the responsible thing, kids, it's what you should do. I swear, I didn't even step foot outside the house without making sure all bills were paid. So I clock out at 7 o'clock, and I decide, you know what, this weekend, my car is a piece of crap, and it can't go. I don't trust it to go great lengths, but I was going to go visit my dad on Father's Day, and he lives just outside of San Antonio, which means there'd be two extra towns I'd be passing through that I wouldn't normally go through. So I decide that this weekend that I just got paid is going to be the weekend I try to find some Guy Gardner stuff from the Superman movie. There's a few different things out there, and I've heard things that, you know, it's going to be a Target, it's going to be a Walmart, maybe a Dollar General, so on and so forth. So I decided I'm going to check it out. So I clock out of work, and I go to my local Target, Walmart, GameStop. And I am finding Superman merch, but I am finding Superman merch, and I just mean the figure of Superman, absolutely everywhere. I do end up stumbling across one Guy Gardner figure, and it's the I don't know, they're saying this is a 12-inch figure. This is more like a 10-inch figure, I feel like. The 10-inch, 12-inch Guy Gardner from Spin Masters. You guys have probably seen these figures. They're usually like the $10 plastic, more rigid-looking figures. We got one, I think, even for the Blue Beetle movie, things like that. I find that, and then I go to the town over to check their Walmart, and they don't have anything either. Now, along the way, I am discovering Green Lantern, which is encouraging, because at the GameStop I stopped at, I found that armor suit Hal Jordan that I said I wasn't going to get, but then I saw it in person, and I liked it, so I grabbed it, the McFarlane figure. And then at one of the Walmarts, I actually saw the Jade figure. So I grabbed that as well. So at least it's like, in terms of worth the drive, I'm finding things. And then the next day I wake up and I go to two or three Dollar Generals in my area. And then I go as far into Austin as I'm willing to go, which is South Austin in a big shopping area called South Park Meadows. And I stop at their Target and their Walmart. And they're Five Below. I heard there's potentially things at Five Below showing up. And I find absolutely nothing. Now, I stop in at the Half Price Books there, and I find back issues of things that I need. So, again, I'm finding things, and it's successful in some respects. And then I go – the next day is Father's Day. So I go start heading towards my dad's place, and I – takes from frequent stops in these various towns along the way because, you know, I'm giving my car a bit of a rest so it can handle the longer drive. And I'm, you know, making an excuse to stop at the San Marcos Walmart and the San Marcos Target. And I finally find at the San Marcos Target, I finally find the 6-inch Spin Master Guy Gardner. This is the Guy Gardner that's in blister casing, and it comes with a piece of a Fortress robot, because there's a Build-A-Figure that comes with this particular wave. And that's, I see a couple of more of the Guy Spin Master tall figures, but again, I already have one. I grabbed an extra one because my little brother's going to be at my dad's place, so give him a Green Lantern toy. After I leave my dad's place, I go to New Braunfels and stop in their Target and their Walmart as well. And I don't find any more things, although I do finally see for the first time, I have stopped at this time, this because this is the end of the journey. I have stopped at a total of 4 Targets, 4 Walmarts, a GameStop, 2 or 3 Dollar Generals, and 2 or 3 Five Belows. This last Target I stopped at was the only store I have ever seen on the peg the Spin Master Epic Strike figures, which are roughly the same size as the regular 6-inch figures. But these are like, you know, you like squeeze their legs together and they do some sort of an action or a punch effect, or, you know, there's actual sort of action on these figures, and they're not in blister packaging. They're just sort of out on the cardboard or whatever. But Guy is not there. So Guy is supposedly supposed to appear in lots of different things. He's supposed to appear in that 10 to 12 inch. He's supposed to appear in the 6-inch figure in the blister packaging with the Build-A-Figure pieces of the Fortress robot. He's supposed to be in this wave of these Epic Strike little action type figures. He's supposed to be in this set of Imaginex figures from Fisher-Price for kids. McFarland is supposed to have a superpowers figure of Guy from the movie. But all I'm finding is maybe at most the Guy of the 10-inch, 12-inch Spin Master big figures. It took so long for me to find one store that had the 6-inch Guy, and that one store had 3 of them. But if you are looking for the 6-inch Guy Gardner out there, the most I have seen is a ton. Superman, if you're looking for Superman, he's everywhere. And I don't just mean like, you know, obviously the movie is for him, but I'm just talking like in ratio to every other figure in the line. I went to one store that had like 8 of these 6-inch figures on the peg, and every single one of them was Superman. The second most I saw was Mr. Terrific. I saw a couple of Hawk Girls. I saw 1 or 2 Engineers. I saw no metamorphos and no guys until that last store that I stopped at. So Guy is actually, for some reason, ridiculously hard to find. I saw none of these Imagine X figures out in the wild. I guess it makes sense maybe that I didn't see the McFarlane Superpowers one because it's technically still for pre-order on their website. So there's that. And obviously the Funko Guy Gardner hasn't even been released yet. Mark and I were talking offline about that before the show. But it's even weird to me that it's almost difficult to even find Guy in the 10-12 inch format Spin Masters. I don't know if it's simply because it's a Superman movie and because he's the titular character, you're going to find more of him than anything else. But the rarity at which there seems to be a big discrepancy, though, in the rest of the characters showing up in the toys, because to find as many Mr. Terrifics as I did, but not as many Hawkgirls or Guys or Metamorphos, is strange to me when in some respects you would think that the rest of the line is supposed to be equal in sort of toy population. Maybe I'm wrong. Is that how toy populations work, Mark? Like, obviously they're going to produce a shitload of Superman. That makes total sense to me. But if you have a bunch of other characters in the line, wouldn't each of those then receive equal treatment for the rest of the distribution?
Not necessarily.
Do they think then that Mr. Terrific is going to be more, since I saw more Mr. Terrific than any of the other side characters, that do they assume he's going to be more popular? Is that what that means?
I don't always know if it's really based on how they think something's going to. Hey, oh, by the way, for not to, just out of curiosity, it's appropriate. Let's say out of appropriateness, I just happened to look at Entertainment Earth. Technically, according to them, their Guy Gardner pop is actually in stock. Hot off the truck as of June 17th. They actually are listed. So they must have gotten there at least a case or two of the Superman Funko Pops in, because theirs are listed as in stock.
If I'm distracted to anybody, I'm ordering online right now.
Are you getting it?
Yes.
All of them are cool. I mean, even the engineer looks cool. Actually, so does Metamorpho with the, but yeah, I just happened to notice that. So I'm glad I could be of service, but the reality is I don't necessarily know if the assortments are always based on, how they think it's going to sell, or it's weird. I'm actually the main reason I'm here is because I'm trying to see. You said this is the 6-inch. This is a 6-inch figure. You said you're talking about the Guy Gardner.
Guy Gardner. He comes in a blister package, and he's got a piece of the Fortress robot as a build a figure.
Yeah. So the case assortment, according to Entertainment Earth, was only a case of five. So you only get in a case. You only have three Superman, one Mr. Terrific, and one Green Lantern in that case.
How many again? I'm sorry.
It is a case of five, and you only get, and three of them are Superman, and you get one Mr. Terrific and one Green Lantern right now. So maybe if those other figures you mentioned are going to be part of this line, maybe they're not part of the first case assortment. But because that case is technically available for pre-order for $54.99 on Big Bad. I mean, excuse me, on Entertainment.
That's so weird. You think if you'd order a case, you're going after the Build-A-Figure.
And it said how many does it say that it takes all five?
It takes all six. So it's Superman, it's Guy, it's Hawkgirl, it's Mr. Terrific, it's Metamorpho, and it's the Engineer.
Yeah, this case assortment in particular, and this might be why it could explain why what you're seeing in the store, why you're not finding some of the other figures either. It's because they may not be in the first wave. They may not be in the first wave of figures. So, and it also ordered. And it also explains why you're only seeing like one Guy Gardner or seeing one Mr. Terrific potentially on per capita, because for every five, for every, if they're getting those cases of five, if they really are only coming in cases of five figures, then three of them are Superman. So the overwhelming majority of the case is going to be Superman every time, and one of the other two. So that's interesting. I don't know if I ever looked at if Big Bad had a case assortment of these. If they did, it probably is sold out. Because it is an interesting dichotomy sometimes trying to figure out who gets a bigger case assortment, or who gets more, I should say, of the case assortment, because sometimes it seems like it's one or the other.
The scarcity just confuses me, because, like, look, I get that. Look, guys, inside baseball, as we record this, it's June 18th. So, like, you know, you guys are hearing this a little while after we recorded it. But even though it's June 18th, I just feel we're less than a month out from this movie. I feel like, shouldn't all the merchandise already be out at this point? It ended up not happening, but I had an idea for a YouTube video where we could all, like, not just me and Mark, we could even invite, like, Donnie to do this and record some stuff on their end, like almost the crossover type deal, where we all go out and we do our own hunts for Guy Gardner merch and see what we can find, and see if we can find one of everything out there in the wild. And then we can do an unboxing on our own channels or whatever the hell we want to do with it. But this that I did this past weekend was almost kind of like a test run for that. Just let's see what's out there. You know, I just got paid. I'm going to more towns than I would normally go in any given weekend or whatever. So, you know what? I'm just going to see what's out there. And the fact that I could find only two things and barely that was crazy to me.
No, I get it. I'm looking at... Let's see. There's another case. There is a case listed on eBay, and appears it's the same. I think it's the same assortment. I'm just trying to get a confirmation. Yeah. So it certainly would appear that the first case assortment of those 6-inch robot build-a-figures are just those three guys, and then the other figures will probably come out in the second wave.
Yeah.
So you said there's five figures total.
Six. Because it's Superman, it's Mr. Terrific, it's Hawk Girl,
Engineer,
and Metamorpho. Engineer, Metamorpho, and Guy.
Okay. I was just, the only reason I stopped them because I was trying to think if they were going to, see, that makes it even more interesting, because there's a chance that the second case assortment will, in fact, I would bet that the second case assortment will still probably include Superman. So it might be even, so some of these characters might still be hard to find, because you're going to get a case of, if they still come in five, and there's three new figures, and you're probably going to have, I would be stunned if you didn't have at least one of these guys from assortment one also in assortment two, which means you're not going to be getting an even split you wouldn't get an even split anyway if there's three characters and there's five figures, but still that means a lot of these cases are simply going to have one of the new characters, and then maybe two of one character. Unless they're going to give you two of Superman, which would be stupid, but they could. So that's why it's weird. Superman's the main character, so they could figure there's going to be a higher demand for Superman than some of these other obscure characters. And that's why, like in this first case assortment, you got three of him and only one of the other two.
I wonder if that's the case for the Epic Strike figures, too, because I could only find the tall guy and then the 6-inch in the wild, I had to try and find the Epic Strike figure online. I could only find it online available through Target. But when I checked Target originally, their website, it was sold out. It was only today that I was able to check Target and it was reavailable for order online. So I finally placed an order for an Epic Strike guy today. And obviously, as we recorded this, I just placed an order for the Guy Gardner Funko. I didn't know the Imagine X figure was online, the Fisher Price stuff, which, by the way, guys, it's a six pack. It's Superman, Terrific, Hawk Girl, Guy, Crypto, and then a baby kaiju. Just the Fisher Price Imagine X style, just a little set of those. And then obviously the Superpowers Wave from McFarland. I ordered that from McFarland's website. And then just in researching, you know, just Superman movie merch featuring Guy Gardner or Green Lantern, just using a bunch of keywords mixed like that, I stumbled across something that I don't think any of us had heard about, which is Hot Topic is carrying a necklace of Guy's ring on a piece of black string. It looks damn close to like the $55 ring that comes in a box from DC Direct or whomever's selling that thing. It's out of, or you can't find it online unless you're looking on third party places like eBay or something right now. But it looks damn close to the the more expensive ring that comes in the box. But yeah, Hot Topic is selling this ring on a necklace. I got two of those. And I had no idea that was even a thing that was coming out. And I've also seen a couple of t-shirts. I only ordered one of them, which is a group. I think if you look for it on Amazon, by the way, the Imagine X thing, I got it on Amazon. I also saw it's available on Macy's for those of you playing along at home, if you want to buy that. On Amazon also, I searched for the Superman Justice Gang, because if you've looked at images online of movie merch, there's a four-pack of figures that says Superman plus the Justice Gang, and it's terrific, Hawkgirl, and Guy. And I was trying to figure out what those figures are. Those are just the tall figures, the 10, 12-inch, whatever the Spin Master sturdy looking figures are, in one box set. So you don't have to go after that. But because I was searching Justice Gang on Amazon, this shirt came up, and it's the Maxwell Lord Justice symbol that they're all wearing. And it's got Hawkgirl, Terrific, and Guy in front of the symbol in like an animation or just drawn style. So I got that just for shits and giggles. But when all that comes in the mail, there will be an unboxing on our YouTube channel, so check that out. But it is, and apparently other people are having problems, because Donnie, Emerald Enthusiast over at Emerald Echo, he just all the time on his TikTok and all this stuff, he's basically, if any one of us besides, you know, Mark, of course, is a big figure guy, toy guy, stuff like that. If any one of us in the Green Lantern creation space is more actively hunting for this stuff all the time and producing content about merchandise, it's Donnie. Even he said he couldn't believe I got as lucky as I did to find the Guy Gardner 6-inch figure to begin with. So it's hard out there for Green Lantern fans trying to find Guy Gardner stuff.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's going to get better or not. Like I said, looking at these cases, the initial case assortment, it doesn't give you a lot of hope, because you pretty much have to be in the right place at the right time or just hope there's not a demand. Because, plus, if the case is ridiculous, it's kind of surprising that, I mean, it could come in, it could come in a master case, and each sub case is only those five figures, which doesn't mean that the breakdown is still going to be the same. But it's possible they actually ship to the stores and maybe not in cases of five, but in a master case of like 10 or something, in some cases of. But either way, it's not a great ratio. I see. The funny thing is, I was thinking about your premise like last week or something, because there was some toy, some Superman movie toy that I saw, and I want to say I think it might have been a guy, but I don't ask me for the life of me which guy it actually was. I was more surprised that I saw Rom, in a pickup. which is always good to know, because in case I had not been able to order it online and things like that, that it's good to know that I would have actually stumbled into it on my own and been able to get it. But I have to go to Target tomorrow anyway, so I can check to see what they have.
That's what I wanted to kind of end this little segment with too, guys, is if you're out there looking for Guy Gardner merch from the Superman movie, with the exception of this Guy Gardner necklace that appears to only be a Hot Topic thing, don't bother with any rumors of people saying, you know, I actually did see some of it over at Dollar General or Five Below. Targets and Walmarts, that's it. Don't waste your time looking elsewhere. If you can't find it at the Target and Walmarts you have access to, order it online. It's really not worth the hunt anywhere else, because it's scarce currently. It's scarce as it is at Target and Walmart to begin with. So if you're hunting this stuff, it's not as widespread as any rumors online make it sound like.
No, that's probably a good plan. Hitting the main stores always makes the most sense anyway. Kind of just harkens back to the good old days, as in stressful, but rewarding, of when you had to physically go find 90% of whatever you were going to stumble into, and ordering online was almost non-existent. Good.
No, I will say, when you go to the Targets, guys, check two spots, check the action figure aisle, but also for those Targets that still have the section, like that back wall and the entertainment center where all the
Funkos usually are,
their action figures are ending up over there too. So check those as well.
I always try to take a look to see what's, what's in both places too. That's good advice.
I tried to find also, just because I was out and about, I found that Galactus Lego figure was one of the new figures I wanted right away, so that was nice. The other Lego figure of the new stuff that I wanted was the Suki from Too Fast, Too Furious. Her pink Honda was put out by Lego in their Speed Champions series. Legos are carried all the time, and new Legos are released alongside like the regular Lego store in Walmarts and Targets. I checked four Walmarts and four Targets, and I did not see that Suki's Honda anywhere. So, total side tangent, but worth 5 seconds. If you guys are Lego fans and looking for that Suki's Honda, that's going to have to be an order online too, because that is nowhere in the wild.
Yeah, there's always some item or items that you're never going to find in the store, or you can't count. I mean, you could stumble into it by dumb luck, or maybe go to some place where all of a sudden you never saw it before, but in some other location or stores on the clearance aisles, like, Jesus, oh my God. But that's where, again, ordering online and sometimes eBay come in handy. It's like, if you see it and it's for a decent price, it's, even if it's something you never thought you were going to be able to get without breaking the bank. That's how I ended up getting the both that Kyle and the Eradicator NFT Funko Pop. So that's kind of, which is still funny, the Parallax Pops still go for relatively dirt cheap. If you ever want, if anybody still wants a Hal Jordan Parallax Pop, that they still sell for probably the majority for like $40, I think, or less. So you could probably get one pretty easily if you want to.
I overspent.
But we didn't spend much for those.
Not too much, but
I overspent for one. The first one I got before Jim took one for the team and got them for us and we reimbursed him. The reality is I think I did spend one like the first day after I got my NFTs, and I did get President Superman, not that I care. I would gladly have traded him in for Hal Jordan, but the reality is at least I did legitimately win one of those and hard to find rare NFT pops. But that night, I know I did buy a Hal Jordan. I did buy a Hal Jordan almost immediately for like $80. I don't really regret it. No regrets. So I don't really care. But the other ones we got, I mean, we got them for like $20 or something, I think, or in that range. So I kind of just regret not getting more. I wish I would have gotten at least one more. I mean, I still have technically two. Still one open, one unopened, but So it's still crosses my mind once in a while. Once in a while, actually, I looked, and for some reason, not for the same dirt cheap price, but I noticed sometimes if you look at on the Walmart site, that sometimes that Funko Parallax, which if you look for Parallax, it actually comes up. Don't tell me why, or it should come up, but it does.
Third-party sellers sell stuff through Walmart.com the same way third-party sellers can do it through Amazon.
And they actually have Parallax Sinestro for $20 on Walmart. Here it is right here for $60. Somebody is selling an NFT Hal Jordan. You can do better than that, people. Just go to eBay. even with the shipping for some, you can get one probably for less. But
all right, what's next?
Let's do, how much time we have, but let's do at least one of. There were, Jamie Lee had two relatively short emails, but let's do the one I said we were going to do, just because it's probably, if we're only going to do one this month, it opens the door for conversation without anchoring us down to, hey, guess what? We're going to go into segment number three, guaranteed. Okay, so it's, hey, it's Jamie, Chad's number one fan.
They lack the context still for that.
Yes, yeah, but just people keep taking notes. Jim understands, but just keep taking notes, because it's eventually, as we're working our way backwards, eventually this will all make sense.
We'll have a feedback episode soon, or like a larger segment feedback episode.
So hey, it's Jamie. You guys have been criticizing War Journal, as he's catching up, saying that it's not quote unquote good without having read War World. I loved War World, bought the omnibus of it, but I highly disliked War Journal and say minimal connection. I was excited, so excited to read Philip Kennedy Johnson doing John after I read War World, and it was a disaster. It was confusing, wasn't really a Lantern book, and a waste of John Stewart. I think he should have kept him on Earth longer or put him alongside another Lantern we care about. Also, to add some about Green Lantern 10 while I'm here, what the F? Basically, what the F, making Kyle scared, the former Blue Lantern, what the F, even though I'm surprised he didn't go to the former White Lantern. But either way, now the reason why this one struck me is I don't necessarily know if you took it any differently, but and it may have just been the way it was written. But going in the way, way back machine, I think the point that we were trying to make about the war world and the war journal connection was, I don't think we were absolutely saying that, oh, if you read War World, because we hadn't, so we couldn't give context on it, and that if you had read War World, you absolutely were going to like War Journal. I think our point simply was, on the surface, it would seem like the only way any of these dots could possibly connect where it would work for you would be if you did read War Journal. Now, this is a cool perspective. I mean, read War World. This is a cool perspective because here's somebody, another person. We haven't heard from many people who read. I think, didn't Dan read the War World stuff?
I don't remember.
I think he did. I'm
fairly positive Phil did.
Yeah, I think you're right about that too. But yeah, we haven't heard from many people who have actually read War World. But I don't think a lot of people have necessarily said, oh yeah, it makes perfect sense, or here's this Easter egg and I got this. And our only point was basically what Jamie kind of echoed through the rest of the email talking about it, which is that without having any context, without that possible bridge into the subject matter, the overwhelming majority of people were absolutely guaranteed to be lost. We just were speculating that since he was building on stuff he had already written before, that if you had read his other stuff, then maybe you wouldn't be as lost, but at least from Jamie's perspective, I guess you would be.
Yeah, the name Olgren means nothing, and the reveal of Olgren in the story of War Journal only carries weight if you know who Olgren is, and the only way you know who Olgren is if you read War World.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, it's not necessarily like, oh, it's definitely exciting if you read War World.
Right.
It's just, yeah.
Yes. It's not if A, then B, from the perspective that, oh, if you read War Journal, then B, that means you'll like, if you read War World, then B, you'll like War Journal, or everything will make perfect sense. It's just the fact that it's more like the only chance in hell it could make sense would be with some kind of context, which you wouldn't have if you didn't read War World at all. And apparently, at least from some people's perspective, even if you did, you're not going to get perspective. But we just knew from not having that background and just being dumped into this that it didn't make a lot of sense, and it certainly wasn't that interesting.
Now, in the same way that Hal facing off against Spectre recently was, you know, something you were looking forward to, but you would only be looking forward to it if you knew Hal was the Spectre for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, even not necessarily even having read the book, because when it was out, it's just the fact that you have to be consciously aware or remember, oh, which is a bigger point. And it's an easier DC reference point than this Olgren War World garbage, honestly. But the analogy is correct. And as far as what was making Kyle scared going, God, centuries ago, it seems, back to Green Lantern, what, number 10. Clearly, it's the emotional spectrum, which is still screwed up. But how screwed up it was at the time and where it was heading, that clearly is what made Kyle. That must have been early on during the Kyle sitting in the corner holding his knees, rocking back and forth days of the book.
Yeah, which doesn't really make sense to me now in hindsight, because with Kyle having gone through all of the rings to intentionally master each emotion to become the White Lantern that he did, his understanding of those emotions are based on his own efforts. Why would the emotional spectrum itself, no longer being as organized as it once was, affect his command or feeling of those emotions? If that makes any sense.
To me, again, the only thing that ever made sense in it was the fact that of all the Lanterns, Kyle had the greatest connection to the entire spectrum because of being a White Lantern and how he became a White Lantern. He didn't become a White Lantern in a quote unquote traditional sense of being given a white ring by either the entity or whatever. It's just the fact that he mastered quote unquote the entire spectrum and became a White Lantern by harnessing every individual component of it. And then when he did that, boom, that kind of like it all congealed and made a white ring and boom, 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 boom. That because the emotional spectrum was in such upheaval, it was basically crying out in pain, if you will, and because of his Kyle's connection to it, that kind of like paralyzed Kyle as for the longest time. Now, yes, it was kind of a trope, and it kind of went on. I think it went on longer than it should have. But the reality is, I believe that is what Jeremy at least was going for.
Yeah, that's about it, though, I think.
Yep, I agree. So before we wrap this up, one thing, because as we are, you conveniently mentioned the date already. So as another reference point, which means absolutely nothing to almost anyone other than me, I would have to say that as we're recording this, barely still, at least my time, that it's still June 18th, 2015, 2025, Freudian slip. There's a reason why I made that mistake. June 18th, 2025 is the 210th anniversary of the Battle of Waterloo in 1815. So my mind was thinking, because it was so recently the 200th anniversary, that's why my mind went back to 2015. So nobody cares but me. But the point that, it is a fairly significant date in history, and I'm watching a bunch of videos today since I was consciously aware of it, and I'm this close to ordering more soldiers, which I probably shouldn't, but I'm probably going to, because they're sitting there in my cart as I'm talking. But that is the one last thing I wanted to add, since the odds of us recording again on another June 18th is probably, it's not impossible, clearly, but not necessarily likely, considering this happens to be a Wednesday and that is our primary recording day. We got at least 7 years, right, before we can come back around.
We'll be here.
God, I really hope that's not the case. But the odds are very strong. One of us will be here, Mr. Heart and Soul. All right,
you ready? Do you want to remind them about another thing that they should be aware of while it's still June?
Oh, yes. Since this will technically be the last release in this very hectic month of recording and releasing, that as we're recording this, while it's only June 18th, this will be the last episode that actually will be released in June, barring anything unforeseen, the final weekend of June. This will be the June 30th release, which means by the time this comes out, by the time you hear this, Dan's final part of GL June, Green Lantern Corps Recharge Numero Cinco, should be out, and thus completing this year's event. And yeah, so if you haven't listened to the other four parts, you better catch up now, because by the time June 30th rolls around, all five parts will be available. So from beginning to end, you can relive the glory in the building of the Green Lantern Corps, reestablishment of the Green Lantern Corps as it was about to roll into the Green Lantern Corps series that we all know and love.
That's true. So the podcast of OA over on their audio or on their YouTube, us, of course, for part two, Emerald Echo and the Multiverse Musings vidcast over on YouTube, Green Lanterns podcast over on YouTube, as well as a bunch of other sources that are available out there. And then, of course, Mosaic Comics on YouTube to wrap us all up. But in the meantime, if people want to reach out to us, what do they do?
And I interrupt the closing of the episode because I got thoughts. I've seen Megan, too. And I've got thoughts. So since we had room in this episode, I want to get them off my chest now, only because with so much on our plate between issue reviews and potential, actually, there's potentially at least two movie reviews even in July. They may not all come out in July, but between Fantastic Four and Superman, not in that order, obviously. And I'm sure Chad and I at some point we'll talk about Jurassic. I figured this would be a good idea to get my thoughts out on Megan too. And I have a lot of thoughts, but I'll try to keep it succinct. But since this episode was not overly long, I figured let me throw this in at the end. So right off the bat, Megan 2 clearly underachieved at the box office dramatically. Barely did $10.2 million. It was originally thought that maybe it could open up in the mid-20s. Actually, I shouldn't say originally. Originally, probably it was tracking higher than that. But even going into last week, I think 20 to 25 is where they thought it probably had a really good, most realistic range to fall in. And that pretty quickly it became clear, no, that was not going to happen. So before I delve into my thoughts on why this, because that's the way my mind works, I'm more analytical. It's like, why did this happen, or why do I think this happened, along with what this movie reminds me of. And obviously most people's got T2 vibes off it, which that's not inaccurate. But there's a couple other sequels it kind of reminds me of too. So I wanted to mention that. But before I dive into that, did I like Megan 2? Yeah, actually I did like Megan 2. I mean, because the one thing you have to give Megan 2 credit for is that it was what the marketing told you that it was, which is not to say, there was some criticism about this movie when the trailers were coming out, that this falls into the category. Some people said that, I feel like I've seen the whole movie. Well, you really didn't, because there's a lot more going on in this movie than the trailers would indicate. And even from a motivational perspective, the motivation of a major character that you see in the trailers is not really what you think it is based on what the trailers would imply. So I think the trailers were accurate based on the tone, that there was a tonal shift in this movie, which is the key reason, I think, why this movie didn't ultimately work for most people and for the core audience. But I think the movie was honest about what it was. It could have very easily just given you trailers that cut together to make it look like it was another horror movie. And it probably would have done better box office, even though you run the risk of really annoying people when you market your movie as something that it's not. So the tone of the movie, making it more action sci-fi with the same kind of humor thrown in from the original Megan, was accurate. So I think that is accurate. But so because I knew what it was going into it, I enjoyed it. I think the ultimate reason why, and some people have speculated it has to do with the release dates. It's like, oh, you're releasing a horror movie in June. It's like, I don't buy that, because I don't think, and I've said this before, I don't think we're at the point now from a movie going perspective where it's set in stone that certain movies have to come out in certain times a year or else they're not going to succeed. Do some movies play better? Yes. Do horror movies play better in October when people are more in the mood? To a certain extent, that's absolutely true. Just like Christmas movies or holiday movies play better from November going forward. But it doesn't mean if there's not a movie that there's a movie people want to see or are interested in that they won't go see it. Final Destination was not exactly a logical choice to release in May, sandwiched between a bunch of potential big movies or blockbusters, and it did fine. So I don't think that's the issue. The only issue with release dates is when you sandwich your movie in between movies that are going to potentially damage it either before it or after it. Probably like what we'll see with Jurassic World, scheduling their movie to come out 1 week before Superman, and then not even being able to have all the premium screens in theaters because F1 has all those lined up. So it's going to make money, but it would almost assuredly have made more money if it just moved away from, for these two, those two reasons, moved away from the competition. I think it was a tonal shift because this movie is clearly not horror. And I think that is what turned a lot of people off. It is one of those interesting things about sequels that, you know, movie going audiences are a fickle mistress, that if you do the same thing over and over again for too long, people will say, well, we've seen this before. There's nothing new here. Why should I see the next installment? But if you stray too far off the path and you do a sequel that's too different than what you've seen before, then you have a visceral reaction, which is this is completely different than what worked and what we liked about the movie and the franchise, or the burgeoning franchise in this case. So it's a very fine line. I kind of always, maybe it's the writer in me, I kind of always respect movies that take a big swing and a miss ultimately, but they swing for the fences, that they do a massive tonal shift in a sequel, and sometimes they work and sometimes they don't, but giving you something that's really different from the original, but it's certainly not the safest way to go. It would have been so safe and probably better, at least for the second movie, to do another. But then again, if you went too far and down the horror road with Megan again, kind of like the journey you put her on in this movie, probably would be less believable, you know, from a suspension of disbelief perspective. But because of that, it obviously reminds the trailers remind you of T2. There's no doubt about that. But to me, the two other movies, sequels that this reminds me of, it reminds me a little of 2010, The Year We Made Contact, the sequel to 2001, A Space Odyssey. Now, this movie's not nearly as good as 2010. And if anyone hasn't seen 2010, it's really, really good. And you don't need to watch 2001 to really know what's going on, because they kind of give you a primer in the opening few minutes of the movie of what happened in 2001, what you need to know. And throughout the movie, you're kind of reminded of the critical moments. But the thing it reminds me of in 2010, not just because it was kind of a big tonal, pretty big, you know, I'd say a big tonal shift, definitely, because Kubrick's movie was kind of all over the place. Maybe more artistic, but it may not be more enjoyable to watch for the average moviegoer. But the journey they put Megan on in this movie reminds me of what they did with HAL, with HAL 9000. Hey, HAL going rogue. There's a Green Lantern tie into this. But in the first movie, clearly HAL's bad. But when you get to 2010, without going into a lot of detail in case people want to watch it who haven't, you get a recontextualizing of what happened in 2001 and why it happened. And that factors in heavily into the ending of the movie and what has to happen with Hal in 2010. So that's kind of what they do with Megan to a certain extent in this movie. Not as, again, not as well as in 2010. But I think there's elements of this. And the other movie it reminded me of, which of course is kind of like the kiss of death, which is appropriate maybe for this franchise, is it reminds me of Book of Shadows, Blair Witch 2. Because it goes completely in such a complete, dramatically different tonal direction that it was almost guaranteed to fail because of why the first movie worked. It's like, hey, no found footage sequel here. It's like, well, that's what people were expecting. Plus, you had so many different ways to go for Blair Witch. You could have done Rust and Parr. You could have done the Coffin Rock story. You could have done Ellie Kedward, how she became the Blair Witch. And instead, that's the option they chose. And it kind of torpedoed what I think absolutely could have been a real franchise. Which angers me on one level because I love the mythology of Blair Witch, but I still appreciate Blair Witch 2 for what it was. I think at least the first half of that movie is highly rewatchable. It was just a really, really bad decision. But I think ultimately that's why that's what the basic thoughts I have on Megan, and so I try to keep this succinct. That's everything that kind of popped into my head. I think it's a fun time. I think there's a lot of stuff in that movie that kind of old. I don't want to make it sound, I was going to say they were all over the place, but that makes it seem like it's incoherent. I don't necessarily think it's incoherent, but there's a lot of different things going on with different characters, and in some arcs they may work better than others. So I liked it. Do you need to run out and see it in the theater? No, I suppose you don't. But that's it. Those are my quick thoughts. And now back to the closing of the show. LanternCast.com. The email is LanternCast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, like us on Facebook, use hashtag GLCast to track us down. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708-LANTERN, and let us know what you think.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.